is interesting. People care about Greek. All over the world, they care about Greek. Well, it is Greek Club at Concordia Seminary. It's almost like an act of the new creation that we're meeting again. So we're walking by faith, hopefully by sight. And so here we are at we're broadcasting today from Victory Tower, Eschatological Victory Tower at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. The sun is shining. And we are reading the letter to the Hebrews. So let's pick up where we left off. Welcome back to people who listen in various and sundry places on the web. Let's see. I'm not a very political person, but I do have to admit that Sarah Palin has forever poisoned the phrase shout out to me. So I can't give a shout out to anybody else because then I feel like I'm from Alaska and that I can see Russia from here or whatever. So Hebrew. Oh, maybe if we climb up the bell tower, we can see it. We are in Hebrews 7, and believe it or not, we are at verse 23, and we're in the middle of this very interesting discussion of how and why the high priestly office of Christ is superior to that of the order of Aaron. And the argument, as you know, is that it's because his priesthood is after the order of Melchizedek, right? So if you'd like to ask me questions about Melchizedek, don't, because I don't know anything about him, and neither do you. But that won't stop you from making stuff up, right? So, all right, so we won't get into all those very interesting features. We will read Greek instead, and we're at verse 23, which reads something like, Kai hoi men pleones eisen geganates hieres diata thanato kolu estai paramenein. So you spot a men, and in Hebrews you can almost always, sometimes you get a random men in the New Testament, you know, but with Hebrews you can almost always count on a de showing up on the other hand here. And in this case, it comes right in the very next verse. You see verse 24 begins with ha de. So Hebrews loves to do this because of the nature of its argument. So we'll take it this way, and on the one hand, we'll take hoi pleones as a noun. Pleon is the comparative of polus. It's masculine plural nominative. The many, the more. Okay. And on the one hand, the more. And now we'll take eisen geganates as a periphrastic construction. That is the linking verb plus a participle. Who can tell me what stem and dictionary form geganates is from? Anybody? It's a participle. It's perfect of genomai. Right. So the writer is saying, and on the one hand, the many have been and are or have become. So you've got the present indicative of amia and a perfect participle. So it's the equivalent of a perfect indicative. Have become hieres priests, and now that's a predicate nominative, right? Because it's with genomai, so that would be a masculine plural nominative. Okay, here comes more Greek Club guys. And why did the whole point is that it's the many as opposed to the one. See, so why is it many? Diata, and you'll see this construction fairly often in the New Testament, where you have diata plus an infinitive to express causal relationship, because or on account of, right? So on account of, koluo means to prevent, and this could parse as either a middle infinitive or a passive infinitive. We'll take it as passive. On account of to be prevented, paramenai, to remain, thanato, dative, probably a dative of cause, because of death. And so when you put all that together, and on the one hand, the many have become priests because, then you take the subject of the main verb and apply it to the infinitive, because there's no explicit subject for the infinitive, because they are being prevented from remaining because of death or by means of death. In other words, you're only a priest so long, and then you die. And then you need another priest, right? See? Again, it's kind of a funny argument, at least. It strikes us as not very theological. But remember that this is the turn of the eras. It's the first century. And the salvation historical reality of the old age now giving way, at least in part and in principle, to the new age. This is actually a very key argument in the first century, and it ought, obviously, to play a part in our theology as well. And so the writer to the Hebrews, one of his arguments is that the reason why Christ's high priestly office is superior is they died, he lives. In a sense, it's as simple as that. Right? So thus far, verse 24, questions about, verse 23, about anything or how that all fits together. Anything in the world. Will.
Why would they stick Thanato right in the middle of that construction?
Why? Just because they could. Yeah, the word order strikes you as a little difficult. Right. Yeah, Hebrews, the word order of Hebrews is probably the most flexible of any in the New Testament that I'm aware of anyway. You want to put a date of none here? That's fine. Just put it anywhere you want to. Anybody remember what the motto for working with Hebrews is? Actually, it's the motto all the time. Pars or die. If you can't make sense of it, you've probably misparsed something. At least I have. So, good. Yeah, no, they just put the dative of means or dative of cause right there in the middle. So, questions? Comments? Yes?
Can you use a declension for play on S?
Well, it starts with play on, omega nu. And then it follows a third declension. So I'm very happy to be able to do this. I'm teaching elementary Greek. So it goes nothing, os, I, a, s, on, si, as. So this is actually the masculine plural nominative, right? And yes, I could parse verbs for food. So if I lose my day job.
I got an extra sandwich.
Yeah, I had lunch already, thank you. Rose Brock is looking at me saying, Mo, I want to be like you when I grow up. Yeah, it's and I believe that for the comparative of polis, I believe the masculine and the feminine forms are the same. In the lexicon, for instance, if you look it up, it'll be play on for both masculine and feminine, and then the neuter is play on with omega nu. Yeah, so. Yeah, and it's as irregular as English. You know, many more. I mean, it's just irregular. So, okay. Very good. Other questions? Good questions. Okay. Verse 24. Now we get the da. On the one hand, the many. Now verse 24. Ha da diatamenen autan, esta iona, a parabatan eche ten hierozinen. But he, and now we have the change of subject where the article actually functions as a pronoun. You see this often in the Gospels especially, and the writer uses it here. But he, now we have diata plus the infinitive again to balance out the one in verse 23. Because of him remaining forever, right? Now we're searching for a verb. Up, oh, there it is, eke. He has... The direct object is tain hierozinein. He has the priesthood as an unchanging thing. Aparabaton is an adjective. It can mean kind of in a moral sense, not transgressed. You might remember that parabino and parabasis can mean transgression. Okay, but here it means not affected by change, right? So, but he, because he remains, has the priesthood forever, or forever could actually modify remains, either one, I suppose. He has the priesthood as an unchanging thing. So in that, you've got two accusatives there, because the article is on hierozinein, that will be the direct object, that's what he echoes, and then you tack another accusative on, and this is what Wallace would call an object complement. Double accusative. So when we translate it, we put as or to be in between the first accusative. Well, it's the last one, but the direct object priesthood and then the modifier a parabaton. So Christ's high priesthood is forever, it's unchanging, right? And again, that's unlike the Levitical Aaronic order of things. It's just different now. As you know, I'm trying to remember if he's done this already. If he hasn't done this already, I think he has, but he'll come back to this great adverb, ephapax, once for all, right? That's a key in the writer to the Hebrews argument, that Christ offers his sacrifice once for all. And so then he ever lives to intercede, right? This is great. You can trick a bunch of Lutherans by setting them up and telling them about how bad Catholics are and that kind of stuff, and then ask them if they need a priest to gain access to God, and they'll all say no. And then you can say, oh, yes, you do. You have a priest. You may not approach God the Father directly. You may not. But you may approach him through he who must be named. That was pretty good, wasn't it? See, I'm relevant. I know about culture. Harry Potter and stuff like that. So, questions about verse 24? Yeah, Mike.
Why do you translate eispon iona as forever and not into the age?
You could translate it that way, especially if you are eschatologically minded. Yeah, it's a fairly common idiom, actually. Now, it carries the connotation of, well, what does forever entail, right? But I think it's just common enough as an idiom that people typically translate it that way. We'll see another phrase, actually, slightly different. I think it's coming up here. Asta panteles. Maybe it's in chapter 8 somewhere. Was that the smoke alarm? Trying to scare us off. So, but literally it is into the age, right? So, yeah. I think this is very common in John, isn't it? Ace, ta, ton, iona, right?
That's partly why I asked is, as it's a common idiom, you know, should it be translated one way and not the other, or is it flexible?
Well, it would probably be working slightly too hard to always translate it into the age, but given, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, given our semi-Platonic worldview, it's not a bad thing to emphasize that forever actually means as history moves towards its goal and towards the new age of salvation, right? Right. That reminded me of another, what was it? I can't remember. Oh, the Creed. I think the Nicene Creed actually is not the life of the world to come, but it's the life of the age to come in Greek. So, I mean, would you like me to talk about eschatology now? Or, I mean, I could if you wanted me to. By the way, for those of you listening online, that kind of sucking sound is eye mucus, as people are rolling their eyes now. And saying, no, let's just read more Greek. Oh, here it is in the next line, Mike. It's another phrase. So, all right. Let's do verse 25. Hathen kai sozein eista panteles dinatai tus pros er chamenus di autu to theo. Pantata zon eista en tinkanein hyper auton. Hathen means whence or therefore or something like that. It can be a logical deduction. Therefore also to save into the always, literally. Panteles is an adjective, into the always thing. But again, it's typically translated forever or completely. And then dunatai is the main verb. Whence also he is able, go back and pick up sozain, to save. Present infinitive, what does that mean? I'm not sure. Could it be emphatic, to indeed save or something like that? Again, I'm not always sure what to do with the present stem forms of the verb, but at least one notices these things. He is able to save completely or forever the approaching God through him ones. Okay, so tus Pros erchomai means approach, and this is just the present participle middle deponent with the article on the front of it. Those who approach, go on approaching, and you approach someone in the dative case, okay? That's how you know that to theo is essentially the direct object of the participle, okay? And that explains the dative, and then diautou, autou would refer to Christ. And we'll clean all that up in a second. Let's just kind of forge ahead then. And then pontita is just the adverb always. And then zone is the present participle of zao, which means to live or be alive. Present participle, active, masculine, singular, nominative. It's like luon. It's just the first participle form that you'd memorize in your participle vocab. So literally, always living. And now another participle, infinitive construction, eis to plus the infinitive, very often expresses, anybody?
Purpose.
Can also be result, things like that. Purpose works well here. Always living in order to, and enting kano, which you actually see occasionally in the New Testament, means intercede. Okay? On their behalf. And the participle works well as a causal participle. The referent would be the he of he is able. So it's Christ, right? And if we take it in predicate position, a causal translation, since or because, works well. And so if we back up and clean up the whole verse, we would say something like this. On account of this, or whence, also he is able to save forever or completely those who approach God through him, since he always lives in order to make intercession on their behalf for them. Again, see, there's the argument that our priest, our high priest, never fails because he lives forever. Thou art a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. I mean, Psalm 110 is big time in Hebrews, verse 4. And Psalm 110, verse 1, you know, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand, is if I'm not mistaken, and obviously I could be wrong about this, I think it's the most cited Old Testament verse in the New Testament. It is all over the Gospels. It's over Acts. It's everywhere. So, questions, comments about verse 25? That one's not too bad. You get a lot of infinitive constructions here, infinitive review. So, all right, fantastic. Okay, verse 26. Toi utas gar hemin kai eprepen archierus hazias akakas amiantas kechoris menas apa ton hamartolon kai hipselateras ton uranon genamenas ... All right. Can anybody spot the verb? If I can ask that question. It's actually eprepen. This is from prepo, which means I am fitting. And this is an imperfect indicative. It was fitting. Or, in this case, he was fitting. Toi utos is, it's a kind of a pronoun. It means such a one. Okay, or one like this. For such a one also was fitting as high priest, humin. Now there's a dative, once again thrown in the middle. Okay. Here, it makes sense to take it as a dative of, anybody got a guess?
Advantage.
Yeah, dative of advantage. Fitting for us, right? For such a one as high priest was fitting for us, holy, hazias, akakas, not bad, right? When in doubt, throw an alpha on the front of an adjective and you negate it, right? Not stained. Now, I didn't look that up. Is that right? I looked at that word and went, I forgot to look it up. I think that means not stained or unstained. Chorizo means to separate. And this is the perfect participle, could be middle, here probably passive. Having been separated from sinful things, from sinners, Okay? If it's sinners, separated not in the sense that he pushes us away, but he's distinct from us in being sinless, presumably. But ton hamartalon could be neuter. I think in the translations it's often taken as masculine, sinners. Okay. And now we're throwing all of these nominatives in apposition to toi utos, such a high priest, right, was fitting. And now let's talk about that high priest. Holy, not bad, not stained, separated from sinners or from sinful things, and a higher, having become higher above the heavens. Hypsilos means higher, or it means high or exalted, and this is the comparative adjective. You might conceivably recognize the teros ending. And it's followed by the genitive of comparison, because it's after a comparative. Having become higher than the heavens. Okay? And now we're going to modify him with a long relative clause in verse 27, but we'll stop there and see if you have comments or observations or questions. So, yeah, Will, go ahead.
Is that participle genomenos? I'm always trying to wrap my mind around this. Does that have anything to do with time? I mean, can we translate that having been, or is it been being? Or
yeah.
Are we left on our own to decide, or does the fact this is an heiress tell us that it's a step
right,
back?
Right, right. Yeah, it was fitting after he had become. Well, that's a good question. I mean, I don't know. Well, I can't give a definite answer because I don't know Hebrews well enough. But is that okay to say? Yeah. but it's at least a possibility because remember that in some, you have to be careful with this because adoptionist Christology is always lurking in the background, you know. But it is a biblical way of speaking to talk about Christ becoming Lord at his resurrection. See, now you have to be very careful with that dogmatically, and this is where we need somebody like Leo Sanchez here in the room, you know. But yeah, that's when he was exalted, right? That's when he was lifted far above the heavens. I mean, that's this teaching of Ephesians as well, right? And he led captivity captive. So it's completely possible, at least, I couldn't say for sure, that there is actually a prior antecedent time sense to this principle. Grammatically, it's ambiguous because the rule of thumb doesn't always apply for, you know, relative time of participle, right? But it's at least a possibility, right?
But a majority, would you say it's going
to... why don't you work up a 4-page double-spaced paper on this one and get back to us on that? Yeah. I mean, I could say, well, but I'd just be guessing. Yeah. And I am taller than most of the people in the room, but that doesn't mean I'm right. So, yeah. I'm clearly the oldest guy here, so... Padez was probably the closest one, and he's just a young buck. So, all right. So we're actually going to stop here. I get to teach the alphabet at 12:30, which doesn't get any better than that. And so we'll pick up here at verse 27 with the inspired relative clause that begins with Hus, right? So thank you very much.
What?
Inspired Angela Goldman.
Exactly. Yeah. I said that in case Clova listens, it'll make him mad. Yeah.